This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by You Build It. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? National.
The White House released the transcript between President Trump and the Ukrainian president, and it didn't show any of what Democrats had told us it would show, nor did it have anything that they hoped it would have. Kind of a problem if you're hoping to use this to get the American public on your side as you start this inquiry into impeachment. And it was kind of funny because yesterday, despite the president saying the transcript was going to be released today, Nancy Pelosi decided to say, yes, because of the reports that we hear about what might possibly have happened on this phone call through a whistleblower who wasn't directly involved but heard about it, we're going to start our impeachment inquiry. Which is why I'm not surprised today when this happened.
I haven't seen it, so I've just come from our own meeting. But the transcript is...
What is the transcript? Because you literally just said you didn't see it.
The fact is that the President of the United States, in breach of his constitutional responsibilities, has asked a foreign government to help him in his political campaign.
But that's not what it shows at all. That's literally not what it shows. Now, you could argue that maybe there's a conflict, right? Because he's running up against Joe Biden. But it doesn't say, number one, a quid pro quo of I'm withholding military aid unless you do this investigation. Nor does it say, man, Zelensky, you got to do me a solid, man. I'm running against this guy, Joe Biden. I think you might be dirty. Can you look into it for me? I'll look the other way. That's not what it said. I defy any reasonable person to read the transcripts and come out of it saying the things that Nancy Pelosi is saying, that Adam Schiff is saying, that Eric Swalwell are saying. Here's the funny thing. So right now, the whistleblower complaint is up for review in a private setting for select members of the Congressional Intelligence Committee. Right now, they can go in, read in this sealed room, because it is still classified, they can actually read the whistleblower complaint. Now, what are we hearing from Democrats who are reading this whistleblower complaint? Eric Swalwell, the congressman from California, said to Fox News, the complaint, quote, doesn't change anything about the urgency and the credibility of the issue. That's a red flag, yeah. It doesn't change anything at all. So, did you see something bad in there and you just don't want to say anything? Because I kind of feel like you would. There are folks who have seen it, who have come out and basically said, there's literally nothing to see here. Nothing whatsoever. This is kind of crazy to me. This is kind of crazy. We've got a congresswoman from New York, Republican, who read this. And she just sent out this tweet moments ago. I do not support impeachment of President Trump. I've just read the whistleblower complaint made available to House Intelligence Committee members. I believe strongly in transparency, and it should be immediately declassified and made public to the American public. Why do you think she's saying that? Because she can't talk about what's actually in it. Kind of give hints. Ex-Swalwell gave a hint of like, we just got to keep going. She's kind of given a hint of, I do not support impeachment. I read the whistleblower complaint. I want you guys all to read it yourselves. That's kind of a hint that there's nothing actually in it. And how about this from Fox News? Exclusively reporting some damning details, if they're true, about the whistleblower. They say a senior Trump administration official claims the intelligence community inspector general found the whistleblower had, quote, political bias in favor of a rival candidate of the president. That seems kind of relevant. Yeah. If the whistleblower is a hardcore anti-Trumper who's a hardcore supporter of, say, Elizabeth Warren, that might come into play here, maybe show a conflict. Now, it's true. It's certainly possible to have a conflict of interest and still point out wrongdoing, right? 100%. But should that not give you just a little bit of pause? Should it not give the reasonable person pause? This information is going to get out there. It's going to be reported. Now, I know Nancy Pelosi and other Democrats hope against hope that no one reads the transcript. And to be fair, most of you won't. They're hoping that no one will hear about what's actually in it. They'll rely on media bad actors who are going to pretend like this is the end of the... The more you learn about this story, the more it becomes clear that yet again, the big, giant bombshell report that would surely lead to the impeachment of the president is nothing. Which is why they're now going back, almost unbelievably, to Russian collusion, so says Representative Maxine Waters.
Lots more coming from all six of our committees, whether it is the Intelligence Committee or the Foreign Affairs Committee or the Ways and Means Committee. This president has clearly defined himself in so many ways. Disrespected the Constitution of the United States.
Disrespect. Write that down on the impeachable list. No, that's my grocery order. That one.
I hate all these books over here.
Okay.
Embrace Putin.
Embrace, but spell it with two O's, because she really led with the poo in Putin.
17 of our intelligence agencies told us that they absolutely have discovered that this president was involved with and knew about what was going on with Putin.
With Putin. They've got absolutely nothing. They're going back to Russian collusion. This is Maxine Waters. Do you think if Maxine Waters believed they had anything with the Ukraine president transcript that she would go back to the Putin nonsense? Of course not. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Happening now.
So there's a bizarre case of a resignation that wasn't a resignation, but it might have been, or maybe it wasn't. Yeah, it's confusing. It's happening in Kennewick, where Vince Beasley was the fire chief there, but he resigned. Only, I guess he says he didn't. He was fired. That's what he says. And now he wants an apology from the city, and he wants his job back. This according to the Tri-City Herald. So when he was still the chief, he ends up sending some kind of statement to the media that says, hey, the city is trying to fire me. And at that point, the city came out and said that he effectively resigned when he put out that statement. So then they end up starting to look for a new fire chief and said, actually, this resignation completely irreversible. But Beasley is all like, I did not resign. I was terminated. There's a different spin being put out there. And then he said this.
With everything in me, this is an injustice. This is character assassination. So that's important to me. That's more important to me than my paycheck. And so I want the wrong to be right.
Wants the wrong to be right. Vince Beasley says their station made some great strides in leadership and some cultural changes.
And the success that we're having, a building of three stations and hiring 18 additional staff in the last 12 to 13 months. You make your own assessment. That's leadership. I have changed the culture. Are there people upset with me? I'm sure there are. But that doesn't mean there's no leadership.
There are definitely people upset with him. Because not only did the city move in this direction, but we've also heard from at least one person who is connected to this story saying Beasley is not being fully upfront or honest about what ends up happening. Now, I have not been able to vet that story, nor have I been able to vet Beasley's position. We've invited him on the show. Hopefully he'll come on this week so we can talk it through. It is kind of interesting to me just because it is a little bit of a cluster of nonsense here. And look, what I guess I don't understand is he says his goal is to correct this injustice, as he said. He wants his job back. So if you were fired, you should not want your job back. If these are people who are stabbing you in the back, then why don't you just come out and say you want the record to reflect the reality of what went wrong and you didn't resign. Just be open like that. I don't know why you want the job back, nor do I know why you would want to work for people like this who you clearly don't trust. Maybe it's time to kind of move on. Now, he hasn't said whether or not he's ready to sue. In fact, the Tri-City Herald says he won't say whether or not he's going to sue for wrongful termination, but he just wants written apologies for what he's calling, as you heard, their character assassination. They're, of course, not going to write out an apology. They don't want to put any of that in writing because then they would open themselves up potentially to an actual lawsuit for wrongful termination.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a good plan on the city's part, and I'm just trying to figure out which fight he's picking here. You know,
does he
want his job back? Like,
he says he does, but
why?
Jason, but that's my point.
If you fire
me,
I'm not coming back.
Peyton, if I fire you, you're 100% not coming back. Nor will you ever have a job in radio again.
Sounds like a vacation to me, honestly.
Oh, you're pushing it. You're pushing it. That's another demerit. Put it in the demerit book.
Ooh, so scared.
Yeah, well, that book's almost full, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You know what that means?
It means I'm pushing envelopes, as the kids say.
It means you're getting that much closer to doing the hobo poop fairy skit. So why don't you just watch it? Yeah, that's a threat.
That's how SPD,
that's a threat.
That's how lawsuits get made, right?
Yeah, you know how lawsuits get settled?
Money.
No.
No.
Threatening you and say if you ever were to sue me, we would crush you.
Can't wait.
Why are all my producers such pains in the... 1-800-465-8770. Producer Tom is like, oh, I'm going to sue you for mistreating me. Oh, you're such a big baby. Physical punishment sometimes is a requirement of jobs. Is it not the case?
Yeah, I'm fine with that part.
Thank you.
That part's fine.
Well, you're also a little weird. 1-800-465-8770. Send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. You can follow me on Instagram. I would really appreciate it. You can go behind the scenes of the show. Fire up that Instagram app. Search for the screen name Jason Rantz. JASONRANTZ. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
Oddly lost in all of the impeachment talk over Trump and the Ukraine phone call is the obvious and damaging connection with Hunter Biden and consequently Joe Biden and his campaign. Joining me on the line is Washington Examiner columnist and author of the upcoming book, Privileged Victims, How America's Culture Fascists Hijacked the Country and Elevated Its Worst People. Joining me on the line, Eddie Scarry. Eddie, thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, good to be here.
So the media is entirely focused on Trump and Ukraine, but not on why he made the phone call to begin with, which is, you know, claims of corruption between Hunter Biden and Joe Biden. The New York Times doesn't want to seem to talk about it. So what exactly is the story?
Well, I would say that that's not why he made the phone call. The phone call was all sorts of things. But yes, a big part of it was corruption. And read the transcript today, it was exactly what I thought it was going to be. The phone call the White House released today, it was exactly what I thought, which was they were generally going to be talking. They talked about a lot of different things, but generally they spoke of corruption in the government, and Ukraine has a very big problem with that that goes back years. Anyone can Google it.
Yeah.
And one of those elements is the Joe Biden question, the Joe Biden with his son, and whether the Joe Biden put pressure on the government to get rid of this state prosecutor who was overseeing a company that Hunter Biden had a very lucrative business deal with. Yes, that could very well be potentially a corrupt thing that happened, a corrupt issue. So there was obviously no problem with talking about that. And what you're asking about the media with that, yes, we're supposed to completely forget about that end of the question. Instead, we're supposed to focus on the president and interference and calling on a foreign country to interfere in an election. Well, I don't know where that came from anyway. I have a piece that's coming up. If it's not up at this moment, it should be up any moment now, asking that exact same question. It's taken for granted, for whatever reason, that Trump brought this up solely because of the election, or solely because Joe Biden is a quote-unquote political rival of Trump. Well, that's really nice that you get cover for potentially corrupt behavior simply because you're running in an election that is 14 months away from now.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a year and 2 months that the president is apparently never allowed to talk about potentially criminal behavior that involves a foreign country. So, you know, this idea that he talks with a foreign country about, you know, about a political rival. Well, the issue at hand involves a foreign country. So this the ignoring of that whole thing, and also just the conjuring up that by the media that President Trump made this reference during the phone call with the head of Ukraine purely for political reasons. Maybe there was some political purpose behind it, but what we don't know is that there is whether there really was a corrupt thing. And I wrote about this morning is that the national media does know that there are questions about this very issue regarding Biden and his son and Ukraine.
Totally.
They know that. There was a whole report in the New York Times this morning that was over and over saying, the Biden campaign for months has worried about whether Hunter Biden was going to be a liability. Well, why is that? Why did they worry about that? Do we not want to get to the bottom of that?
Well, what's particularly telling in all of this is it's not like at the time, because the reason why this was such a big deal was the conflict of interest. You've got Joe Biden, who, as vice president under Obama, was the point person dealing with Ukraine at the same time that his son picks up this $50,000 a month position on the board of the country's largest private gas company. Hunter Biden doesn't really have any connection to working with companies like that. And it was covered, the potential conflict, at the time in the media. And so they deemed it interesting at that point. But now all of a sudden, because Donald Trump is talking about it, it's not necessarily a story whatsoever. There's something that Trump is trying to hide. It's just, it's dishonest.
Yeah, and you know, I would think that if we were going to get look at this really, I think even the norms, like the average voter, and especially, I guess, Democratic voters, they would look at that and say, all right, so Joe Biden's son got a kickback. You know, remove Trump from the equation, okay, entirely. Remove the phone call and Trump. Those voters might say, all right, so his son looked like he might have some money based on his dad's being the vice president and, you know, whatever. But the fact that there's this all-out hostility from liberals in the national media and from the Democrats who now want to pursue impeachment over this phone call just because Trump brought it up in the phone call. Well, now that's like they stepped on the rake and it bounced into their face, and it kicked up, you know, and it hit them in the face, because now we have to talk all over again about Joe Biden and his son and whether that was cooked. And now, and not only that, is now he lying about it? Is now he lying and saying, well, no, I didn't do that, when it really does, it looks very fishy, and everyone in the national media knows it. They acknowledge it in their stories. They're just refusing to really, they have no enthusiasm to actually answer the questions about it, even though in their very reporting they'll talk about the questions. The whole thing it's looking bad for them. Biden's campaign should be very worried about it. I read two stories about how, one in the New York Times and one in Politico, about how Joe Biden is being very aggressive with the media and pushing back, and they don't want another Hillary 2016 with the emails. They're pushing back. Well, they're pushing back, but we're still not really getting the answer to what's going on there. And the more time that goes by, eventually we'll get there. The national media may be slow on this, but we'll eventually get there.
Last question for you, Eddie. Who do you think is going to be the first Democratic candidate who's actually going to call Joe Biden out on this? And you cannot say Tulsi Gabbard. That doesn't count. Already Kamala Harris and Bernie Sanders kind of balked at the question. Who do you think is going to actually come out and use it against Biden?
I guess, I assume you mean in that it matters that they do, or maybe I guess it doesn't matter, but there will be some consequence. Who's going to be at the, it'll happen if it does happen at the next debate. I wouldn't put it past one of the really low tier ones like Cory Booker or Julian Castro. I forget if they're even qualified right now to make the debate.
Neither so far are qualified.
If they do, it would be one of those two.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm assuming Tulsi Gabbard will do it, but again, she's at that point where it doesn't really matter. I've been talking with Eddie Scarry. He is a columnist over at the Washington Examiner. His book is coming out very, very soon. It's called Privileged Victims: How America's Culture Fascists Hijacked the Country and Elevated Its Worst People. Eddie, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Good talking to you.
Good talking to you. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Celebrity news.
So real quick, I just want to point out this revelation. There we go. I got to spit that out. That was made on CBS This Morning. And it's kind of an interesting one that, you know, people are weirdly excited about, and they shouldn't be. Oprah Winfrey says that she was asked to moderate one of the DNC debates, but she turned it down.
When I'm watching the debates, I was actually also asked to be moderate one of the debates, and I didn't even want to do that. And when I watch the debates, and I was like, "You should." Yeah. When I'm watching the debates, I'm like so happy I'm not in any of it.
Why would you have any part of any debate ever? I don't understand that. I know that people like Oprah. She's a likable person. She made lots of inroads. She basically revitalized and created the daytime talk show as we know it. But that's it. You're not a political savant. You're not particularly political at all. What questions would you ask? Would you be like, do you believe in the secret? Marianne Williamson, if Oprah Winfrey was one of the heads of these debates, she moderated, she'd get a lot of extra play. I don't understand this.
Yeah, I...
Especially, by the way, just real quick. Not that I have to tell you real quick. I'm the host of the show, producer.
You do what you want.
But a big deal on the left was calling out Trump for just being a reality TV host. And now you're normalizing that kind of identity by putting Oprah there. Why? Because you like her? Because it's a little bit more woke to have her there? I mean, okay. Is Sally Jesse Raw? Is she still alive? I think she is. Let's have her do it. What's the Maury Povich?
Yeah, I like Maury.
Not what's his name.
What's Springer?
No.
Is he still alive?
I think so.
I hope so. I grew up on that show.
Montel Williams cannot do it, though. Montel, remind me at the end of the show to tell this story in the last segment, but I will tell you this. Montel Williams used to harass the hell out of me on the radio.
You probably deserved
like,
it.
Like, sending in messages, listening to my show while it was on at night. He used to send, like, nasty tweets. And then his publicist started. just remind me to tell you that story. 1-800-465-8770. It's the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rant Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. The race for governor keeps getting bigger, and that's good news for Republicans who actually want to be able to have a say in who can take on and actually defeat Jay Inslee. Anton Sakharov is a community activist and businessman who knows what it's like to live under oppressive anti-capitalist and, frankly, anti-Semitic regimes, something he fears could happen in this country and really in this state as we tilt closer and closer towards socialism. Anton Sakharov joins me now. Anton, thank you so much for coming on.
Hello, Jason. Thank you for having me.
So what makes you alarmed at the direction of the state?
I think our state is actually moving towards socialism. I have seen socialism with my own eyes in the Soviet Union, and I have seen the poverty, the corruption, the fake promises over there, and I definitely see it in our state creeping in with every single step that the Democrats are taking.
And do you see that just kind of being pushed in Seattle only and it's starting to spread, or are you seeing it sort of pick up all across the state?
I think we're used to seeing it in Seattle, but it's definitely creeping across the state, and Seattle is being the center of the state in terms of where the ideas start brewing there. But it's definitely getting in every single corner of our state as we move forward.
Do you think that's being driven purely by the politicians who are in power? Or do you have a generalized fear, as some people do, including myself, that, you know, the younger demographic seems to be sort of moving in that direction? And I'm not entirely sure I understand why.
I think younger folks haven't seen the Cold War. They haven't seen what the Soviet Union did. And, you know, they hear the words free for this and free that, and they're starting to accept that. Mm-hmm. Well, I can feel it a mile away, and I can tell you it's not going to be as pretty as it sounds.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the issues. I love that the state of Washington and Governor Jay Inslee will tout himself as supporting businesses. And yet under his watch and under the Democrats in power, we've seen taxes like there's no tomorrow. So what would you do to help businesses with more of a focus, I guess, in particular on small businesses?
Absolutely. One thing I'm making a promise to every voter is when I'm elected governor, there will be no state income tax. So that's the top of where I want to prevent happening in the state. But I realize that small business is very important for our economy and that we need to focus on cutting regulations and helping small businesses continue what they're doing and start helping new businesses to start going across the state. So I'm focusing on cutting regulations and making sure that the tax we guarantee that there's no tax increase for the first 5 years for small businesses across the state.
Well, something that you're touting is a plan to essentially incentivize businesses to open up new offices in some of the less populated parts of the state. So what would a plan like that look like?
Yes, I think we have businesses who are focusing on the main metro areas here in Bellevue and Seattle and Spokane, and I think we need to incentivize businesses to spread across this vast state that we have, and that will help
both offset the infrastructure use and consumption across the state, as well as create new jobs across the state. So it's incentivizing the businesses to start opening new locations across the state, and also incentivize businesses, especially high tech, to allow Washington residents work remotely, which will also help relieve the traffic problem that we have in our state.
But does that look like the incentivization? Is that tax breaks? Is that what we're talking about?
We could see a small tax breaks for specifically for opening new locations. But at the end of the day, what we need is we need new businesses coming into areas that are, right now are not moving in. And we need to also bring in new business everywhere else, right? One of the ideas I'm thinking about is opening a special economic zone to allow new manufacturing moving into our state that will help offset any other tax incentives that I'll be proposing.
Well, at that point, of course, the question becomes, where exactly do you put it if you've got communities that don't like it when, say, new asphalt processing plants go up in Pierce County, and you've got people who say, we don't want to live next to that. And so when you're trying to manage those kinds of concerns, what's your general take? Is this something that's going to come top down from you as governor, or do you anticipate more of an approach that's inclusive of the different communities?
My approach is first listening to the people of the state. I think this is what the current administration is not doing at all. I think our people are left behind, and they're completely not being listened to. So one of my main things is to focus on the people of the state and listen to their concerns first.
Just joining me, I'm talking with Anton Sakharov. He is a Republican who is running for governor. His website is antonsakharov.com. It's spelled SAKHAROV.com. We've also got the information up on my Twitter feed at twitter.com/JasonRants. Now, obviously, one of the issues that we have to talk about, because it's impacting almost every single part of the state, is homelessness. Now, you said that you would ban illegal sanctuary camps. And I'm curious, though, how do you do that from a state level, given that recent court ruling that essentially said, look, you can't boot people without a shelter bed to provide them? So how would you implement a plan like that statewide?
So I think the homelessness issue is a symptom of four main areas that I see. And that is, we have a mental health issue, we have a drug mm-hmm. issue, we have a crime issue, and then we have a job loss issue. I think at the end of the day, those four are the top reasons why people end up being homeless. And I want to work on programs that have a specific goal in mind to actually reduce homelessness, not necessarily to sustain some kind of a immediate hope for tomorrow, but really we need to get homelessness to zero. I think it's very unfortunate that we have so many people on the streets today, but it's also unacceptable to have that many people on the streets in America and in our great state. So one of the ways to solve this is to focus on the real solution of getting it to zero and tackling those four main areas of why people sure. end up on the street.
Yeah, but again, how would you ban illegal sanctuary camps? Because I think that's one of those ideas that a lot of people will support, as do I. However, the reality of the situation is the law says that we can't just do that. So how would you actually implement a plan like that?
Absolutely. So number one, we need to back the blue to make sure that the police officers are able to do their jobs.
Yep.
And to enforce the law. That's the number one thing that we need to accomplish here. Now, we need to identify areas where we can help move folks into permanent housing across the state, and we can't be building housing in the most expensive parts of our state. To accomplish that, we need to implement a statewide program where we build housing for those folks who do need housing. Now, for folks who are mentally ill, we need to make sure that they're getting the proper care in the mental hospitals. For drug addictions, we need to focus on helping folks get off drugs at specific facilities that focus on this area. So again, it's not just, we're not going to put all people in prisons. We're not going to move them out into a different state. We need to find a solution that solves this problem. And my goal is to not just spend the money and show that we're actually, the state is spending money, but we're not reaching any results. The results should be we need to move to zero count on homelessness. And that's top of my mind.
Do you think schools are properly funded? Since, you know, you bring up funding issues on homelessness, which will frankly cost a lot of money, especially when you consider the mental health aspect of all of this. And yet the sort of the subtext of all these conversations seem to be about funding via the McCleary decision that says, hey, you've got to give a certain amount of money. Are you pleased with the amount of money right now that's going into the schools?
I think we're definitely funding schools well. I think what we need to implement is school choice. I think we need to create competition between schools to really help schools focus on how we spend money wisely. Because right now it's at the end of the day, you know, money is being spent, but again, there's no clear results that the schools are striving for. And I think school choice would actually give us that a clear direction of improving schools while keeping our budget low. And just like with homelessness, I mean, we are spending money today. We're spending money today, but we're not spending it wisely. And I think we need to think how we're spending it and repurpose it the right way to really solve real issues that people are facing.
So last question. Ultimately, what sets you apart from some of the other candidates? Because a lot of people, especially who are active in talk radio and follow the news, they know Phil Fortunato as a state senator. They know what he stands for. People know Joshua Fried because of his activism against heroin injection sites. Folks know the police chief, Lauren Culp of Republic, because, you know, he's a strong supporter of gun rights. So what is it about you that sets you apart from everybody else who's so far declared?
Well, I think the number one is I'm a Jewish refugee who's seen socialism, and I'm a proud American today. I support the Constitution as a whole, not just Second Amendment. I support the Bill of Rights. And at the end of the day, what I've been doing in the last 13 years in private business is getting things done. And I really think the governor of our state is someone who gets things done for the people of our state. And this is really what I want to do, is solve real issues that people are facing today with real solutions instead of just talking about them.
Well, there you go. AntonSakharov.com. Go there now if you want to learn more about his campaign and find out ways that you can help. Again, it's Anton Sakharov, Sakharov spelled SAKHAROV.com. And again, we've got the information up on my Twitter page. Anton, thank you so much for stopping by. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show, 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. We're live in this online Trading Academy studio. If you haven't yet done so, this is so weird. We've been setting up these goals for how many new subscribers we can get to the podcast. And for the most part, we haven't really been talking about it on air. Every single month, I've exceeded the goal. I am 4 subscribers short of my September goal. Only 4. Right now, there are 4 people out there who don't listen to all 3 hours of the show. Shame on you. But you can rectify that by becoming a podcast subscriber to the show. You can do it in a number of ways. Go wherever it is you download your podcast, whether it's Stitcher or iTunes or the Google Play Store. Just search for the screen name or the name Jason Rantz Show, or text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770. People who subscribe to the show support us just as much as they do when they purchase from any of our advertisers. So I'm 4 short. I just got a few days left, so I think I can do that tonight. Text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770. There's a story out of Fremont, California from KPIX-TV that Peyton and I were talking about during the break because it's kind of funny. A Tesla electric patrol car is being tested by the Fremont police because they want to see whether or not this is a good patrol car for them, because I'm assuming, like everybody else, they're sort of looking at the cost of gas, they're realizing it keeps going up. Maybe there are environmental concerns. They don't want the gas guzzlers polluting the world just so they're wandering around their communities in their car. So they're looking at a Tesla. Now, of course, that's a cool kind of patrol car. Yeah, that's a cool car.
Yeah, I would drive one of those.
Yeah, didn't go so well. Yeah, they ran low on electricity in the middle of a pursuit after the department said someone forgot to plug the vehicle into its charger. According to officials, The officer was pursuing a vehicle headed down to the South Bay when the car began to run low on battery power. The officer said, according to police radio transmissions, just slowed down to 6 miles of battery on the Tesla, so I may lose it here in a sec. Someone else is able. Can they maneuver into the number one spot? Now, the good news is other units did take over the pursuit. Police said the chase was called off when it became unsafe anyway, so it doesn't matter at the end of the day. They later found the abandoned vehicle in San Jose. Fremont police spokesperson said the Tesla wasn't fully charged at the beginning of the shift. This unfortunately happens from time to time, even on our vehicles that run on gas, if they aren't refueled at the end of a shift. I take that point. That's a very valid point. My assumption is every once in a while, let's say you're looking at your patrol car, you realize it's running low on gas before you're able to fill it up. Maybe something happens that you need to engage. And that, okay, I'm assuming that really happens from time to time. I'm assuming it's rare. I've never actually heard of that, but I'm assuming it happens. Can we not go with the electric cars for this? I get that people want electric vehicles out there because it means less carbon emissions. Okay, fine. Count me in. I'm someone who doesn't drive a car. I don't want to force it, but if that's what you want to do as a consumer, cool. Let's not do that with the patrol cars. Let's give them as much gas-guzzling power as humanly possible if it means they're going to get the bad guys.
Yeah, give them a Hemi.
Right? Give them a tank if you want to. This whole idea of the militarization of the police department, oh, it's wrong. No. Let's lean into it. Let's lean into it, because I'm not going to act out if a tank is right behind me. Granted, a tank doesn't go that fast, but rig it up so then a pod can come out that's a motorcycle that chases, because I think I've seen that in some of the Marvel movies. Do something like that.
Yeah, that's what you want.
Good for them. By the way, how'd they get Tesla electric patrol cars?
That's cool.
It's expensive.
You know, in Italy, you always see the pictures of like the Lamborghini police cars. How many of those really are there?
There's gotta be like one. Yeah. Look, I spent about a little under two weeks in Italy.
Nice flex.
All first class, baby. Florence, Milan, and Rome. Not only did I not see the Lamborghini patrol car, I didn't really see any nice cars. And I was in Milan for a couple days. Like, you would assume that I'd see them. None.
Yeah, that's all I picture Italy.
Yeah,
is,
none.
You know, spaghetti and Ferraris.
There was lots of pasta. That part's true. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. Text podcast to 1-800-465-8770.